Heidi Exers, welcome to Market Scope for June 2011. It's back to Lexington, Kentucky with Chris Gay as the AM dial begins to get more interesting.
Now we make a fairly big jump from 840 all the way to 1110 for WCBR in Richmond, Kentucky, a religious station. D1, 250 watts, daytime only. When I made this recording for a top of the hour ID, the best ID I got was actually in a commercial.
In styles for every age. If you don't wear the sizes I specialize in, but have handbags and shoes, you're more than welcome to consign with me. Just give me a call, 643739. I'm located at light number 3 on Eastern Bypass, right behind Chase Bank and close to Joseph's Shoe Repair. Hope you have a blessed Thanksgiving, and thank you for listening to WCBR 1110 AM Gospel Radio.
This afternoon, a couple of showers around early, remaining mostly cloudy the rest of the day, high 52. Clearing tonight, low near 30. Tomorrow's going to be a sunny day, we'll have a high of 58. Clear skies tomorrow night, low 38. Saturday, plenty of sunshine, the high temperature 62. It's going to be mostly sunny on Sunday, high 66. Monday, a mixture of clouds and sunshine. There is a slight chance for a shower, high again 66. I'm Staff Meteorologist Jim Rinaldi. That's your official forecast of WCBR, 1110 AM.
Running low on fuel? Better stop at your nearest Hardy BP mark where you can fill up.
WMST at 1150 is next. Station in Mount Sterling with a nostalgia format. U1, 2,500 watts during the day, 53 watts at night.
Call 606-845-9663 or 877-845-9663 or grahamlumber.com.
We got it all right here, man. A.W. Graham, man.
106.9 FM at AM 1150 WMST Mount Sterling. CBS News Time. It's 1 o'clock.
CBS News. I'm Steve Kathan. In a sign, layoffs may be easing. The government reports first-time claims for jobless.
We go back to Nicholasville, Kentucky, for our next station, WLRT at 1250 on the dial. Religious programming, U1, 500 watts during the day, 59 watts at night.
We give you a 60-day money-back guarantee. Don't wait another minute. Get the natural, long-lasting energy you need. Call 800-375-5030.
Online at b12cbslradio.com.
Broadcasting from the Lexington Athletic Club studios, we are Lexington's Real Talk. AM 1250, WLRT, Nicholasville, Lexington.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington. The United States may be the...
At 1300, WLXG, an ESPN radio station here in Lexington, U2... 2,500 watts during the day, 1,000 watts at night.
Super Bowl, but you gotta win playoff games.
The Herd, weekday mornings at 10 on ESPN, Sports Radio 1300.
It's one thing to run a perfect race.
And Zenyatta goes to four in a row with a flawless performance.
Trading dealership for mail-in rebates from 11:30 to 10.
ESPN, Sports Radio 1300.
WLXG, Lexington.
ESPN Radio Sports Center.
We go back to Richmond, Kentucky for our next station at 1340 WEKY, which identifies its format as news, talk, and classic rock. U1, 1,000 watts.
WEKY Richmond, 1550 WIRV Irvin. News, talk, and classic rock.
WEKY and 1550 WIRV.
1340 WEKY Richmond. 1550 WIRV Irvine. News, talk, and classic rock.
CNN News, there, Nicholas reporting.
Once again, we go to Nicholasville for 1380 WMJR, a Catholic station, U1, 5,000 watts during the day, may be operating under a CP, which allows 10,000 watts during the day, and 38 watts at night.
St. Charles Borromeo, pray for us. More to come in just a moment. Diocese Live, your Catholic show on your Catholic station, Real Life Radio 1380. We'll be right back.
With your Real Life Radio news in a minute, I'm Joe Lerza. Remember that candidate who said he was running for a seat so he could abolish it? Well, he owns of it. A donation of 5 or more cans of food got customers a $10 rebate on purchases of service or parts at several area Toyota dealerships. This year's collection exceeds 2009's food drive by nearly 1,200 pounds of food, according to a news release from Toyota Motor Sales. That's your news in a minute on your Catholic station, Real Life Radio 1380.
My name is Mary Lou McIntyre, and I'm the receptionist here at Jack Kane Ford. I just like the way that people are handled with concern.
Do you have a favorite business? A business that is the best in their field? Someone you recommend to your friends? Then let them know about your favorite radio station and how you support our advertisers. And let us know about them. Just send an email to info@realliferadio.com. Let's all spread the good news about our faith. Real Life Radio. Change your station, change your life.
Good afternoon. We are back. Diocese Live, your Catholic show on your Catholic station, Real Life Radio 1380. I'm Leo Brown, your host. Happy to be with you. Happy to welcome a brand new advertiser into our family of advertisers, and that is Just Us Girls, the gift shop next to Purden.
1400 WCYN in Cynthiana, Kentucky is an oldie station. U1, 500 watts during the day, 1,000 watts at night.
ABC News Now. I'm Daria Albinger. Congressman Charles Rangel has asked that.
1440 WYGH in Paris, Kentucky, a Spanish religious station, is U1, 1,000 watts during the day, 25 watts at night.
Señor Jesucristo, este fue tu programa, Momento de Reflexión, que Dios te bendiga y te guarde.
You're listening to Radio Vida on WYGH, Paris, Lexington.
Si se te ocurra tocar su sintonizador, automáticamente recibirás un shock eléctrico si lo haces.
At 1470, we have WBFC in Stanton, Kentucky, with gospel music, U1, 2,500 watts during the day, 25 watts at night.
You are listening to WBFC, 1470 AM, in Stanton, Kentucky.
With SRN News, I'm Rich Thomason in Washington.
This is all being done for the protection of the traveling public.
How do you pronounce the capital of Kentucky? Is it Louisville or Louisville? Well, actually, it's Frankfort, and the capital city is where we go for our next station on 1490, WKYW, a talk station, U1, 1,000 watts. We have to multitask a little bit with this one, as we have an ID right on top of a commercial.
You're listening to the Ed Schultz Show on Frankfort's Talk Radio, 1490 WKYW.
By the National Fair Housing Alliance and the Ad Council.
Frankfort's Talk Radio, AM 1490 WKYW, the home of Fox Sports Radio.
How to lower it. If you have diabetes, know your risk. Know your A1C. Ask your doctor. Or for more information, go to
www.diabetesa1c.org
or call 1-877-A1C. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association.
Central Kentucky weather on Frankfort's Talk Radio.
1490 WKYW.
Hope you're having a great Monday. I'm ABC 36 Storm Team Meteorologist Mary Watson. Mix of sun and clouds today and very warm with temperatures into the low 70s, and it's going to be a bit breezy. Winds out in the southwest 10 to 20 and wind gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Tonight, rain moves in after midnight, and that will continue throughout your Tuesday. I'm ABC 36 Storm Team Meteorologist Mary Watson for Frankfurt's Talk Radio 1490 WKYW.
This is Frankfurt's Talk Radio, 1490 WKYW. Get your weekday started with Imus in the Morning from 6 to 10. Then you can hang out with the coaches. The Joe B. and Denny Show is from 10 till noon. While you're working, it's the Ed Schultz Show from noon to 3. And on your commute home, it's the Dave Ramsey Show from 3 to 6. And Fox Sports Radio will take care of you the rest of the night. It's Frankfurt's Talk Radio, 1490 WKYW.
And last but not least, on 1580 WGVN in Georgetown, Kentucky, Rhythmic Oldies, U3, 10,000 watts during the day, 45 watts at night.
Here comes 50 minutes of old school hits from the 80s, 70s, and 60s on Groovin' 1580. Broadcasting worldwide at Groovin1580.com. Live from the Key News Journal studios, this is WGVN AM, Georgetown, Lexington, Groovin 1580.
I hope you've enjoyed this AM Market Scope from Lexington, Kentucky. This is Chris Gay. You can contact me via email at K as in kilo, U as in uniform, the number 4, A as in alpha, at yahoo.com.
Thanks again, Chris, for a great Market Scope. Remember, if you'd like to profile your market, send your tapes or discs to me, Phil Wayne, at 313 Spring Street, Upper Sandusky, Ohio, 43351-1652. The audio service fans would be most thankful. Now Fred is back with musings from the members.
Give us your thoughts about what's happening in your area. Call the Musings Line. Keep your ears open. And when you hear something that's important for everyone to know, call us.
Hello, fellow DXers. Wayne Ryan in Brantford, Ontario. I received my tape the other day. Was very glad to get it. I really enjoy Mark Durenberger's features, and I'm looking forward to meeting him. Yes, I'm looking forward to the convention in Omaha, Nebraska in October. I think it's going to be a wonderful thing, and I thank Ernie Wislowski for putting that together. And I'd like to mention something, too, that my friend Mike Lance is doing. On Tuesday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Time, he has what you call a radio connection conference in room 560 on the conversation station chat line, which is area code 231-224-7222. Come and join us. We have a wonderful time.
Hello, DX Audio Service members. This is Mike Dukin calling, and I say my story is better late than never. I've been with, much like Tim Hendel, I've been with the DX Audio Service nonstop since May of 1985. I currently live and have been for the last 30 years near Hayward, Wisconsin, on the Lacouturay Ojibwe Reservation, where I came here to help start WOJB Radio, the first Native American owned public radio station east of the Mississippi. I've been retired from the station going on 6 years, but how I got into the audio service, though, was back in 1981, when I was listening to the DX Party Line on HCJV. Somebody was on there and made a plea for people asking if they would like the magazine through the National Radio Club on put on tape. And they gave an address as Box 24, Cambridge, Wisconsin. And I typed a letter and had it sent out. And I forgot about it till about till, well, 1985, till I got the second issue of the magazine, which was the May, edition. And I liked it so much, I sent in my subscription and sent it in. I said, give me some more of that. And I've been a member of the magazine ever since. My interest, of course, is in radio. I like AMDXing. I like FMDXing. And I have a strong interest in music. I like different types of ethnic music, from Native American music to ethnic music. Believe it or not, polkas and waltzes, and I also like good old time rock and roll, classic rock and roll from oldies from the, preferably from the 50s and 60s, classic soul, and even some classic country as well. I guess that is it. No news from up here, so I'll just simply say, enjoy a good spring, have a good summer, 73s. And good DX.
Hello, Fred and DXers. This is the one and only Victor speaking to you from the Schmidt House in downtown Silver Spring, Maryland, on May 8th, Mother's Day. WCRW 1190 in Leesburg is on the air, coming in very clearly here in Silver Spring. The format is Chinese news about China in English. We have a station on 1190 that does it for Russia, so if you want to know about those two countries, tune in on those two stations. I don't get WCRW at night, so I don't know if they're on at night or they just cut back. Also, I have to laugh a little bit of all these stations going on FM. I remember in 1967, on April 1st was the date that all FM stations had to have separate programming from their AM. And it looks like we're going around in a full circle now where the AM stations want to go back onto FM. I have a question. I got my first skip on May 5th from around 4 p.m. to around 8, and I got channels 2, 3, and 4 from Cuba. What was unusual about this skip is that there was very little fading. The signals were constantly steady, weak, as though you were watching an old analog channel on rabbit ears for about 50 miles away with a little snow in the picture, and the color was there. But my question is, does anybody know the definitive answer to what causes skip? I've been told it's the E layer of the ionosphere. I was told it was severe thunderstorms halfway between the transmitter and the receiver. I was also told it may have to do with sunspot activity. So what is the definitive answer to causing skip? Thank you.
Hello, it's Joe Schwab from Richmond, Virginia, here on Saturday afternoon, May the 7th. And I just want to tell you a couple of quick things. WCR on 1190 is on the air with a Chinese format. It's in English, but it's from Radio China, apparently. And the other thing is sort of an unusual situation, I think, involving sports. You know, for the past several years, WTOP has been, or not WTOP, WFD has been the flagship station for the Washington Nationals. Well, they switched flagships, that's what to say, over to 106.7, which is now a sports station, but they still are carrying their games on WFD, even though it's the same market on 1500 AM, and apparently that I assume they're still owned by two different companies. So I think that's sort of unusual. Anyway, 73 is good DXing, and we'll talk with you later.
And that is our musings to the members on this edition of the DX Audio Service. And if you'd like to muse, it's very easy to do. Just pick up the telephone and give us a call, 419-741-0205. That's 419-741-0205 for DX Audio Service members only. Victor, let's answer your question about FM and TV skip. First of all, we need to define what is normal. And a normal signal, a VHF or UHF television signal, or an FM transmission, is typically what they call line of sight. Let's define what line of sight is. You have a globe, a circle, our Earth, and you have a tower which sits upon it, and let's just assume it's 1,000 foot tall, and you have antennas at the top of that tower. You draw a line from the top of that tower all the way out to the horizon, and at some point you're going to touch, and then after that distance, the Earth curves, and that signal is being blocked. Now, this is typically about 40 to 100 miles in an area where there's broadcast spectrum congested, but it could be about 50% further in absence of interference in areas where you don't have a lot of radio and TV signals. Now, sometimes these signals can be received hundreds or even thousands of miles outside their intended coverage area. Now, the first and most common of these phenomena is called tropospheric ducting. This happens in warmer weather when there is a high pressure system nearby, and it's more prevalent over flat terrain or even water paths. Now, what happens is the warmer layer forms in the atmosphere above a cool layer of air. Now, that's why it's called temperature inversion. This causes a high refractive index, which means that normally the signal would come off our antenna and go to that furthest point on our sphere, our Earth, and then it would just carry out into space. However, upon encountering this warm layer, it's bent back to Earth, and this can last a few minutes to several hours. It affects all frequencies, but it's most prevalent above about 100 megahertz. Now, another type of skip is called sporadic E, or E-skip. This happens when ionized particles appear in the E layer of the atmosphere, and it's more prevalent during the high periods of the sunspot cycle when the atmosphere is unsettled due to solar storms. It is more likely to affect frequencies below 125 megahertz, usually in the evenings or the early mornings. Not nearly as frequent are F2 openings, where signals can travel for literally thousands of miles. Now, this will happen during peaks of high solar activity at the peak of the 11-year sunspot cycle. The last peak of the cycle was 1999 to 2001. So guess what? We're coming into a peak right now. So that's why you could see Cuba all the way up in Maryland. Now here's Mark Durenberger with a story about QSLs.
QSLs are a portal to the past by Jerry Berg, March 18, 2011 in Radio World News Magazine. Recent articles in Radio World about AMDXing and QSLs are a reminder that the hobby of long-distance radio listening is still around. During the first few years of the 1920s, the novelty of the radio medium made AM broadcast DXing very popular with the general public. Interest waned in the mid-20s, but was rekindled in the early 1930s with the advent of shortwave broadcasting and the possibility of reception over hitherto unachievable distances. DXing declined during World War II, but bounced back during the Cold War and held its own until the media landscape began changing in recent years. Among the hardcore, however, the thrill has never died. To the DX cognoscenti, there is nothing quite so exciting as hearing a faraway signal direct with nothing between you and the station except the ether. It's not about how well you hear a station or what the programs are. It's about distance and power. The noise, fading, and interference of a tough DX catch just add to the excitement. DXing is an acquired taste, especially on shortwave. Your neighbor might be able to relate to the novelty of hearing a domestic AM station at a long distance, but try to explain the joys of staying up all night to listen to a station that you can barely hear broadcasting in a language that you don't understand. For years, DXers believed that if they could only get people to try DXing, they'd like it. They found that the primal spirit that motivates the DXer is not easily transferable. One of the tangible byproducts of DXing is the QSL, the card or letter from a station responding to a reception report in which the listener proves his or her reception by describing the programming heard. The QSL card verifies the listener's reception. DXers, as we know, collect QSLs as mementos of their reception and as evidence of DXing achievement. The QSLing of broadcast stations is often thought to have been an outgrowth of the common ham practice of exchanging QSLs, thus applying to the one-way medium of broadcasting a practice that developed in the two-way medium of ham radio. In fact, however, ham QSLing itself grew out of the even earlier practice of hams and non-hams alike sending postcard reception reports to hams and other experimental stations that they heard. This pattern took root in the second decade of the 1900s. In those very early years, transmitter range was the main indicator of station performance, hence a station operator's interest in knowing how far his signal could be heard by whoever happened to be listening. Such reports were considered valuable, whether coming from the ham at the other end of a QSO, a listening ham, or a non-ham listener or experimenter. And thus, reception reports to broadcast stations in those days actually represented a return to the earliest conventions of listener-station contact. Since 1986, a six-person group called the Committee to Preserve Radio Verifications has been archiving collections of QSLs belonging to listeners who have passed away or who are no longer collecting. Originally sponsored by the Association of North American Radio Clubs, a listener club umbrella that operated for 40 years, the committee has functioned independently since 2005. The QSLs are housed at the Library of American Broadcasting on the campus of the University of Maryland in College Park. The approximately 45,000 QSLs under the roof, that figure includes duplicates, are mainly from U.S. and foreign AM stations and shortwave broadcast stations worldwide, with some FM, TV, amateur, and utility stations represented as well. The collection includes QSLs belonging to more than 200 DXers. From some, there are just a few. Other collections run well beyond 1,000. To leaf through the QSL collection is to see radio history pass before your eyes. The oldest QSL, a ham card, is from 1921. The oldest from a U.S. AM station is from WKN Memphis, dated 1922. Among the QSLs in the collection are a 1923 letter from KDKA, a 1941 letter from Major Edwin H. Armstrong, verifying reception of his FM station, W2XMN, and a letter and card from pioneer shortwave broadcaster PCJ in Hilversum, Holland, sent in 1929 while shortwave broadcasting was still in the experimental stage. QSLs needn't be of special historical significance to be interesting, however. There are QSLs from big stations and small stations, from World War II and from the Cold War years, from private stations and government stations, from the U.S. and from exotic locations, from countries that no longer exist, even from pirate stations and clandestine broadcasters. Some QSLs are simple, others elaborate. Sometimes the text is pro forma, other times detailed and personal. Often stations include a schedule, coverage map, photograph, or other souvenir. Station logos, signatures of station personnel, descriptions of equipment, and so forth. They all provide a valuable connection to the station's history. Sometimes it's the only history that remains. Although the committee began as an effort to memorialize the work of individual DXers by salvaging this material that was probably headed for the dumpster, it's more than a sentimental exercise. The collection has served as a source of information and graphics for books, articles, and websites. Because of the size and scope of the collection, a station's QSLs over a range of years can be compared, offering some visible continuity to the history of stations, many now long gone. QSLing has changed over the years. Once the province of the station's technical staff, to whom long-distance reception was no less a novelty than it was to the listener. Today, QSLing is mainly a matter of listener relations, and much QSLing is now done electronically. While plainish-looking email verifications do not display as well as their postal mail counterparts, a colorful email attachment can offer much the same satisfaction as a paper postcard QSL. Alas, budgetary considerations have led some stations to stop verifying altogether, and in general, it's harder to pry a QSL from a station than it used to be. But for those bitten by the QSL bug, it is still the essential last step in a DX experience. That article in Radio World, written by Jerry Berg, a retired attorney, a member of the Executive Council of the North American Shortwave Association, and co-producer of the website OnTheShortWaves.com. Berg has been a DXer for more than 50 years and has written three books on the history of DXing and shortwave broadcasting. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service.
And now a receiver review by DX Audio Service member Rusty Curry. Rusty is located in Eugene, Oregon, about 50 miles from the Pacific Coast. His review is titled, A Brief Review of the Texan PL310. I will concentrate mostly on medium wave and FM performance. The PL310 costs about $60, and in size is at the upper end of the ultralight range. The radio's greatest strength on AM is the 5 selectable bandwidths, which give it a combination of fidelity and selectivity that would be impossible in a similar radio without digital signal processing, or DSP. Fidelity in wideband mode is a bit short of FM, but is good enough so that drums and cymbals come through very well. Of course, you really need headphones or an external speaker to take full advantage of this feature. There is a 5-kilowatt station on 550 kilohertz about 40 miles north of here, which puts in a good rimshot signal into Eugene. The PL310 brings it in with full quieting in the wideband mode, but nearby noise sources can cause some interference. Switching to the second widest band eliminates most of the noise, while it still gives better than average fidelity on the AM band. Selectivity is pretty similar to that of some other radios its size, but selectivity sets it apart. The other night I picked up WGN in Chicago on 720, just well enough to hear the call letters and tell that they were doing the weather. I then tuned my Grundig Traveler 2 to the same frequency. I was able to understand a few words, the difference being that KIRO on 710 was interfering somewhat, where it didn't on the PL310. I've picked up several other W-prefix calls on the PL310, all without use of a select antenna or similar device. The most outstanding feature of the radio is its FM. The sensitivity is very close to the best radios that I've tried, in spite of its fairly short antenna, while selectivity is far superior to that of any non-DSP radio that I know of. The CC Radio SW is a full-size radio, costing more than twice as much as the PL310, and has an excellent FM section. Compared to the GE Super Radio 2, for instance, the CC Radio SW has maybe a slight edge in sensitivity and a definite edge in selectivity. If you compare the CC Radio SW to the PL310, the SW might have a slight edge in sensitivity, but the PL310 is far more selective. The PL310 also has far superior resistance to strong signal overload, even though the CC Radio SW is above average in this regard. This last factor changes the sensitivity equation in some practical listening situations, as I have to lower the antenna on the SW, where I never had to do that with the PL310. To give an illustration of what the PL310 can do, we have a local station at 95.3, which runs only about 600 watts, but which transmits from the main Eugene FM antenna site, so it puts in a solid signal over my area. On 95.5, there is a 100 kilowatt station in Portland, Oregon, about 105 miles to the north, Riding Around Eugene with the PL310 tuned to 95.5 and the antenna extended, all I hear is the Portland flamethrower popping in and out. There's not a trace of splatter from 95.3, and no overload garbage from the strong local signals. Additional strengths and drawbacks. Strengths. The radio has a mono setting. It has excellent battery life. I never kept track, but I would guess that the number of hours the radio can run on a set of double A's is in the triple digit range. Weak points. The tuning dial is pretty useless in the ordinary tuning mode, as at least with the radio that I have. There is a marked tendency to skip frequencies. The radio has keypad entry, so tuning in stations is not a problem, but exploring up and down the dial is a hassle. This is frustrating when you're traveling and all you have is a radio with FM. On the AM side, the muting function means you sometimes don't get as much volume on really weak signals. I was rather surprised to find that the radio doesn't pick up the X-band, that is, frequencies from 1600 to 1700. There are some digital noise artifacts on some frequencies, but I don't have enough experience with digitally tuned radios in this price range to know how it compares in this regard. As far as I know, the radio is not sold by anyone who will provide any product support to speak of. As a blind person, I would know a lot more about using the radio at more than a basic level if I could have bought it, say, from C. Crane. To sum it up, although there's a lot of reasons to buy this radio, as well as some drawbacks, I think the groundbreaking FM performance is most compelling, in my experience, where DSP improves AM performance. With FM, it's a real game changer. The more congested the FM dial, the more the radio blows away even larger and more costly radios. Here in Eugene, the PL310 can bring out several weak signals that other radios can't. I'm sure in places like New York City or Chicago, where the dial is really packed, the difference it would make would be even more remarkable. Recently, Texan came out with the PL606, using the same DSP design as the PL310, but somewhat smaller. It comes with an extender that can be attached to the telescoping antenna, which increases its length to 38 inches. Gary DeBrock has tested the two radios, and the extender gave the PL606 a clear FM sensitivity advantage over the PL310. And that is a review of the Texan PL310 by Rusty Curry.
Ham Radio Thrives, written by David Rowan in Wired magazine. Somehow it makes little sense that amateur ham radio continues to thrive in the age of Twitter, Facebook, and iPhones, and yet the century-old communications technology, which demands such commitment that you must generally pass an exam to receive a license, currently attracts around 35,000 practitioners in Europe and a further 700,000 in the United States, some 60% more than 30 years ago. What is it about a simple microphone, a transmitter receiver, and the seductive freedom of the open radio spectrum that's turned a low-tech anachronism into an enduring and deeply engaging global hobby? Well, for a start, there's that thrill in establishing a magical person-to-person long-distance radio conversation that no commodified internet communication can compete with. In a world of taken-for-granted torrents of emails, instant messages, and Skype video chats, there's a purity and a richness in the shared experience of exchanging 73s during a live QSO with strangers on another continent. Why, the very ham slang that defines the community, 73 translating as best regards, and QSOs as two-way conversations, tells practitioners that they belong to a special, mutually curious, and highly courteous club. And the fact that DXers take the trouble to acknowledge received transmissions and conversations by sending their new contacts custom-designed postcards through the analog postal service, well, that's charm itself. In a world where it's considered excessive to end a communication with anything more effusive than a bestest. You only need study a handful of these cards to understand, even today, the old-fashioned excitement of connecting with a stranger who might be many thousands of miles away. The postcards, known as QSL cards, can be as quirky and personality-filled as the senders themselves, at times humorous and characterful, at others terse and geographically factual. They have naturally inspired their own subculture that has spurred DXers to collect and display them, much as they would colorful foreign postage stamps. The cards invariably display as a minimum some basic factual information about the sender. This will generally include the radio operator's individual call sign, his location, and there are not too many hers, unfortunately, and a few details about the signal detected. And just to show that the Twitter generation did not invent the linguistic contractions exemplified in text message speak, QSL cards, too, rely on slang and abbreviations to pack information into a tight space. So cards will display the RST, the received radio station's readability signal and strength. Perhaps details of the sender's XMTR, transmitter, and ANT antenna. And occasionally a request to reciprocate, expressed as the shorthand PSE QSL TNX. Please send an acknowledgement card, thanks. Or the more chatty HWABTACRDOM. How about a card, old man? Old man, by the way, is not a reference to the recipient's age. Just as on the rare occasions when the DXer is female, she's referred to as a YL, a young lady, whatever her chronological age. DXers have been exchanging QSL cards since at least 1916, when Edward Andrews of Philadelphia, call sign 3TQ, recorded the receipt of a card from 8VX of Buffalo, New York. Over the next decade, the hobby took off, so much so that by 1928, Paul Siegel, W9EEA, had formulated an amateur's code, setting out six key qualities to which practitioners must adhere. The radio amateur is considerate, loyal, progressive, friendly, balanced, and patriotic, Siegel specified, always ready for service to country and community. Since then, the hobby has captivated royalty and celebrities alike. Among the most celebrated DXers have been the late King Hussein of Jordan, call sign JY1, Queen Noor, JY1H, and Juan Carlos, King of Spain, EA0JC. Had you picked the right moment, you could have chatted with Morocco's King Hassan II, CN8MH, the former Sultan of Oman, A41AA, or the King of Thailand, HS1A. If monarchs have never appealed, you could instead have shot the breeze with Marlon Brando, FO5GJ, Prime Minister Rajiv Gandhi of India, VU2RG, or the CBS anchorman Walter Cronkite, KB2GSD, not forgetting the singer Cliff Richard, W2JOF, Joe Walsh of the Eagles, WB6ACU, and genuinely beyond this world DXers such as Yuri Gagarin and Helen Sharman. Ham stepped in on September 11, 2001, and during Hurricane Katrina. Then there was Tony Pole Evans, a bird lover with a shortwave radio on Saunders Island, who famously risked his life during Argentina's 1982 invasion of the Falkland Islands to radio the first news back to Britain that 1,000 soldiers had landed on Goose Green. How exciting it must have been to intercept that particular radio call. And boy, what a QSL card to top one's collection. You can tweet all you like, but this is the way to communicate. And that story in Wired Magazine was authored by David Rowan. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service.
Before we wrap up this edition of the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service, I'd like to remind you that when that survey comes out, we do need your participation. We need you to fill out that survey and return it to us as soon as possible. This survey is going to kind of give a direction to the magazine, where we need to go, what things we need to do to make you happy, also information that we may be missing that you want. So be sure to fill out that survey as soon as you get it and return it to us promptly. That will help out. And again, just a quick plea for information. It seems when we started the magazine, we used to get a lot of articles from people, from newspapers and from magazines, even cassette recordings recorded off the radio, submissions to MarketScope, and that seems to have fallen off in recent years, which is kind of troubling because that means we don't necessarily have the information that people want. And if you're thinking that somebody else is going to do it, guess what? They're thinking you're going to do it. So we're kind of at a catch-22. So please take the time, submit information to the magazine that we can use and would be beneficial to all the members. That's it for this edition of the DX Audio Service. We'll see you in 30 days with more DX stuff. Remember, get out and support radio.